Blog Talk Radio.
America is a land of heroes, a place where greatness is born, where destinies are forged, and where legends come to life. This is the home of Thomas Edison and Teddy Roosevelt, of many great generals, including Washington, Pershing, Patton, and MacArthur. This is the home of Abraham Lincoln, Frederick Douglass, Amelia Earhart, Harriet Tubman, the Wright brothers, Neil Armstrong, and so many more. This is the country where children learn names like Wyatt Earp, Davy Crockett, and Annie Oakley. This is the place where the Pilgrims landed at Plymouth and where Texas Patriots made their last stand at the Alamo. The American nation was carved out of the vast frontier by the toughest, strongest, fiercest, and most determined men and women ever to walk on the face of the earth. Our ancestors braved the unknown, tamed the wilderness, settled the Wild West, lifted millions from poverty, disease, and hunger, vanquished tyranny and fascism, ushered the world to new heights of science and medicine, laid down the railroads, dug out the canals, raised up the skyscrapers. Our ancestors built the most exceptional republic ever to exist in all of human history, and we are making it greater than ever before. This is our glorious and magnificent inheritance. We are Americans. We are pioneers. We are the pathfinders. We settled the new world. We built the modern world, and we change history forever by embracing the eternal truth that everyone is made equal by the hand of Almighty God. America is the place where anything can happen. America is the place where anyone can rise. And here, on this land, on this soil, on this continent, the most incredible dreams come true. This nation is our canvas, and this country is our masterpiece. We look at tomorrow and see unlimited frontiers just waiting to be explored. Our brightest discoveries are not yet known. Our most thrilling stories are not yet told. Our grandest journeys are not yet made. The American age, the American epic, the American adventure has only just begun. Our spirit is still young. The sun is still rising. God's grace is still shining. And my fellow Americans, the best is yet to come.
You believe that? I believe that. James Bostic here, Conservative's Perspective on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. Mark is on hiatus for a couple of weeks. Some family things are happening. Obviously, that takes precedence over everything else. He's going to be back soon. Don't worry. In the meantime, you got me. So anyway, he will be back soon. And you're going to see him posting. He may come on the show. It's just that he's not going to be doing the radio for a while because he's got to hustle up and do some other things that are more important at the time. The president there, James Bostic, asking you. No, the president is not James Bostic. That was the president, comma. And I am James Bostic asking you the timeless yet unanswered question, where are the Democrats who are saying these things? Where are they? Where are the Democrats who say what the president says? Where are the Democrats with any kind of sincerity? Actually, we can expand that, you know, for that matter. Where the hell are the Democrats? Period. Seriously, where are the Democrats? Like I said in the teaser, like it or not, and there are a lot of people that are okay with it. Nancy Pelosi, for one, we'll get into that in a minute. But the Democrat Party most likely going to be the Communist Party here, at least for a little while. We talked about this Tuesday, and apparently we're going to talk about it a little bit longer today. We're also going to talk about Phil Haney, too. If you don't know who that is, we're going to talk a little bit about that because there's some very mysterious circumstances surrounding the recent passing of Mr. Haney. That's for a little bit. Here's what the Democrats are talking about. We'll get into Phil Haney a little bit. Right? Okay. We've heard the president. Listen to the Democrats.
Donald Trump thinks it would be better if he's president. I do not think so. Vladimir Putin thinks that Donald Trump should be president of the United States, and that's why Russia is helping you get elected, so you'll lose to him.
Bernie and I agree on a lot of things, but I think I would make a better president than Bernie.
Bernie Sanders' analysis is right. The difference is I don't like his solutions.
Walking distance here is Mother Emanuel Church. 9 people shot dead by a white supremacist. Bernie voted 5 times against the Brady Bill. I'm not saying he's responsible for the 9 deaths, but that man would not have been able to get that weapon with the waiting period had been what I suggest until you are cleared.
I'm hearing my name mentioned a little bit tonight. I wonder why.
Well, my good friend on the end of this platform, he in fact bought a system that was a private prison system. After he knew that in fact what happened was they hogtied young men in prison here in this state. They in fact made sure that in Georgia they did not have health care for the people who were being held.
But I get to answer.
No, no. I
get to answer that. Look, the fact is, here's the deal. I'm not out of time. You spoke over time, and I'm going to talk. Here's the deal.
Here's the deal.
Stock in a prison company thinking they'd do a better job, and I investigated and I sold it.
Okay.
You knew when you bought it
they'd done that.
I get to answer this question. I have worked tirelessly on this, and you know I'm right. You wrote the crime bill.
Where we come from, that's called Tommy Come Lately.
There are other people here. To put hundreds of thousands of young black and Latino men in prison.
Okay.
I'll tell you exactly what it adds up to. It adds up to 4 more years of Donald Trump, Kevin McCarthy as Speaker of the House, and the inability to get the Senate into Democratic hands. The time has come for us to stop acting like the presidency is the only office that matters. Look,
hello.
If you want to keep the House in Democratic hands, you might want to check with the people who actually turned the House blue. 40 Democrats who are not running on your platform. They are running away from your platform as fast as they possibly can.
At least I didn't have a boss who said to me, kill it, the way that Mayor Bloomberg
never said that.
Have said to one of his pregnant employees.
I never said that.
And for the record,
if she was a teacher in New York City, she would never have had that problem. We treated our teachers the right way, and the unions will tell you exactly that.
Mayor Bloomberg has been doing business with China for a long time, and he is the
only one on
the stage who has not released his taxes.
So is Joe Biden.
So they'll be out. We probably have another couple of weeks left to go. We're doing it as fast as we can. We've complied with every single requirement.
Okay. All right. Well, you heard that, and it's pretty safe to say, like me, you don't have the faintest damned idea what the Democrats are talking about. And those are the heads. That's their best and brightest. That word soup that you just listened to there. Excuse me just a moment. Yeah, that word soup right there that you just listened to, that mangle, those are the heads. That is the vanguard of the Democrat Party. Those are the leading political lights of the left. Mother of pearl. There was like 2.5 more minutes of it, but I couldn't take it, and I didn't think you guys could either. So what you got, through that, you probably saw that the long knife, just as I predicted on the Sunday show, recorded, by the way, for Mojo 50 Radio, mojo50.com. If you're not listening, you really should be, because it is the best in libertarian and conservative talk radio. That's showing in on the Tuesday live show, which we do twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, live 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. As he gains momentum, and Bernie's got some mo going on right now, the Democrat Party is going to fundamentally, on some levels, maybe not to its core, but on a lot of levels, and some of them pretty deep, it's going to have to mold itself to this democratic socialism that Bernie says is better than regular socialism, and it's really going to work this time because he knows what he's doing. And the Democrat Party can't do anything about it right now. He's done something that is kind of remarkable in the primary system. He won Iowa. He won New Hampshire, and he won Nevada. And apparently that's never been done. He's the first guy to do it. So he's got this momentum, and what you saw at the debate Tuesday night, obviously, these guys are gunning for him, and they're going to try and start chopping at him. They have to. If they want to stay and some of these guys are running out of gas. Some of them are running out of money. Elizabeth Warren canceled, I think, $500,000 of ads that she had had going in South Carolina. It's looking like Biden's going to do well there, and that Bernie is losing any ground he gained in Florida because of this. And the thing is, he hasn't backed up off of it. And that's going to hurt him. Let me find it here. Yeah. Get a load of this.
Back in the 1980s, Sanders had some positive things to say about the former Soviet Union and the Sandinistas in Nicaragua.
And everybody was totally convinced.
Here he is explaining why the Cuban people didn't rise up and help the U.S. overthrow Cuban leader Fidel Castro.
And he educated the kids, gave them health care, totally transformed the society.
We're very opposed to the authoritarian nature of Cuba. But, it's unfair to simply say everything is bad. You know, when Fidel Castro came into office, you know what he did? He had a massive literacy program. Is that a bad thing? Even though Fidel Castro did it?
There's a lot of dissidents imprisoned in Cuba.
That's right, and we condemn that.
So, obviously, the literacy program was implemented before these people were taken out and shot on the beach. But did they do it before or after they were tortured? And what were they reading? Were they reading the classics of Western civilization, or were they reading propaganda as to how great Fidel was? Insane. Insane. And the establishment people in the Democrat Party are really starting to get nervous because – we're just going to – you got to take this stuff seriously. He doesn't have to win in South Carolina. Gary Benford, my man, we were talking about this just last night. We were on the phone talking about a few things, and he doesn't have to win. He just has to stay within a couple of points of Joe. And like Bernie pointed out, like Gary pointed out, Bernie also doesn't really have to win in South Carolina. Well, yeah, but in Super Tuesday as well, he just has to place well. And if he comes out ahead of Warren and Buttigieg and Sanders, Steyer and Bloomberg, he's in pretty good shape. And it could be conceivable that he wouldn't have any problems declaring himself the presumptive nominee from that point on going into the convention at Milwaukee. Something miraculous or catastrophic, depending on your viewpoint, is going to have to happen here between now and Super Tuesday to throw this guy off the tracks. And if it doesn't, then he's going to be the guy. Now, he's going to be the guy to the convention. At the convention, it's going to be a different story. But they're already raising the hue and cry. Excuse me. And one of the first guys to do it, Chris Matthews. And Matthews is as Democratic as you can get. He is a Democrat guy through and through. He was trying to think, what was that guy's name? Tip O'Neill. Matthews worked as an assistant to Tip O'Neill back in the day. So yeah, he's Democrat all the way. This is what he had to say after Bernie had done well in the debates and then moving into New Hampshire.
But I think that the Democratic Party has to figure out its ideology. In Britain, we had the Liberal Party. I wasn't born at the beginning of last century. With the Liberal Party, they were overtaken by the Socialist Party. Labour became the main threat, the main challenger, the Tories. Churchill went back to the Tories. We know a lot of us know that history. A lot of us will be sorting things out if the Democratic Party runs a socialist candidate. That's a change from the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party has been to the left of the Republican Party on the issue of mixed capitalism, more social programs. They push Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, enormously popular programs. I think ACA, Obamacare has also wished they'd follow through with it and make it work. I think most Americans would be happy to have a public option and have Medicare follow through with. But I don't want to get into this. You know, I'm on every night. I let the Democrats figure this out. I have my own views of the word socialist, and I'll be glad to tell them, share them with you in private. And they go back to the early 1950s. I have an attitude about them.
Now, what the hell? I'm going to go ahead and do it now.
I have an attitude towards Castro. I believe if Castro and the Reds had won the Cold War, there would have been executions in Central Park, and I might have been one of the ones getting executed. And certain other people would be there cheering, okay? So I have a problem with people who took the other side. I don't know who Bernie supports over these years. I don't know what he means by social. 1 week it's Denmark.
Yes,
like
you
Denmark.
Do.
Okay, that's harmless. That's a
we all know you do. You've known since the guy's been in politics.
Denmark is harmless, pretty clearly in the Denmark category, yeah.
Are you sure? How do you know? Did he tell you that?
Well, I mean, that's what he says, and that's what his agenda calls for, right?
Yeah,
he's
yeah,
not calling for
it. Let's check that one out.
Well, we haven't seen a campaign yet. Where video of him praising the other version
right.
of Castro
and
has been used,
well, but that's
a, will be used.
That's the question of how can, what's the effect that has.
Well,
what does he think of Castro? That's a great question. What did you think of Fidelismo? We all thought he was great when he first, I could cheer like mad for him when he first went in. And then he became a communist and started shooting every one of his enemies.
Okay,
he didn't become a communist. Okay. He didn't become a communist, Chrissy Pants. He was a communist. He was a Marxist. He was a Red when he was running around with his rebel army up in the mountains and in the jungles. He didn't just come to power and decide, you know what? By God, I think I am going to turn commie. I am no longer going to be a man of the people. I'm not going to be the revolutionary general who, like Washington, got everything set up, got them going, and then bowed gracefully out. And I think I'm going to become a communist dictator. Raul? Where's Raul? Raul? Get some of the fellas together. We're going to have to kill some people, probably a lot of people. And I want you to go ahead and let's get some lists together. Well, we're going commie, man. Yeah, we're going red, dude. Load them up. Let's get rolling. No, he was a communist when he came out of it. He was a communist in the jungles. And they know that. Just like they know what a freaking Marxist burn. They're shocked and appalled now that the establishment Democrats are going to be squeezed out of the Democrat Party with these reactionary left-wing moonbat socialists and communists. Now they're worried. They've known all the time. Here's what Bernie had to say after, whoops, didn't mean to say that. Here's what Chris Matthews had to say about Bernie after he won the Nevada caucuses.
I think Harry Reid on your show yesterday made it very clear, and I think he was right that there could be a very plausible case for the moderates to coalesce around one candidate and take it to the convention. But again, Chris, we've got to keep in mind, these guys have got to get 15%, and right now, California, for example, you've got Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden are the only two that are clearing 15%. If that is the case, and that means that Bernie Sanders could come out of Super Tuesday with a disproportionate number of delegates than what he should be getting based on the vote percentage he's getting right now.
Is there somebody not running that should be running? I mean, I could defend that this race lacks somebody, and I don't know whether it's Sherrod Brown or who's not running. Andrew Cuomo. I don't know.
You got to remember though, these voters wanted less candidates running, not more candidates running. And
right.
these are the.
I'm
candidates
talking about contenders.
but voters.
I'm sorry, back to you. You know what I'm talking about? I mean, I know so many people that just don't have a candidate.
Well, look, I think that there is still a sense that people are just feel confused, that they just want to get some answers out of who is best positioned. Because, again, this question of electability is still driving at the heart of all of this.
Yeah.
Of, like, who is
they're
actually
confused.
Going to be able to beat Trump? And because there's just so many answers to that question,
nobody,
that's part
sweetheart.
Of why there's sort of this searching feeling of, like, okay, who else might even be out there? But I don't think that at this point that we can expect that these voters are going to search for another person coming out of left field.
I'm wondering whether the Democratic moderates want Bernie Sanders to be president.
Yes.
I mean, that's maybe too exciting a question to raise. They don't like Trump at all. Do they want Bernie Sanders to take over the Democratic Party in perpetuity?
Well,
I mean, he thinks it over. He sets the direction for the future of the party. Maybe they'd rather wait 4 years and put in a Democrat that they like.
I mean, that's the big question, right? And, you know, what the narrative that you're starting to see play out, Chris, is that there are people that are concerned, strategists that are concerned, that Bernie Sanders being the top of the ticket will force us to lose the House. I don't necessarily think that's
the
case.
How about
early.
Losing the future?
It's early.
Yeah.
But that's why I think that there is a potentially plausible argument, to Gabe's point, depending on how many delegates the moderates can amass.
Right.
If you've got four moderates that have amassed significantly more delegates than Bernie Sanders, you know, it's midway through this fight, then...
Well, here's the question. If the four moderates, we call them all moderates because they're not Bernie, but the fact is that we're talking about Amy, we're talking about Senator Buttigieg, we're talking
either.
About Biden, we might be talking about Bloomberg as well. Okay, those four. If they can't agree now on which one of them is going to be the nominee, they're going to somehow agree at the second bout of the convention?
Well, I mean, the big fear that everyone obviously has, if we're really going to play this forward and look at multiple rounds of voting at the convention, is that the party's going to be torn apart. And you tell me that the party's not going to be torn apart if Bernie Sanders enters the convention with a plurality and then doesn't end up with the actual nomination.
And if
that's
a recipe,
is that a lose-lose?
Probably, but that's one of the reasons that no one is really...
It's not going to happen, guys. Hang on a second. Yeah, okay, here we go. And this comes back again to the superdelegates. And it was the superdelegates that screwed this crazy old man over back in 2016. And they have... not all of them. The New York Times has interviewed 93 superdelegates in recent days. And of these 93 superdelegates, these guys, according to the New York Times, overwhelmingly oppose backing Bernie Sanders as the party's nominee if he fails to enter the party's convention with a majority of the delegates. Now, a Democrat candidate needs a majority of pledged delegates, and that number is 1,991, going into the convention in order for the candidate to secure the nomination on the first ballot. Anything less than that is going to result in a contested convention, and that hands the power back to the superdelegates or the unpledged delegates who could and in all likelihood will defy the will of Democrat voters and throw their support to someone else for the nomination. Now, of the nominees that were asked this question at the debate, the previous debate, Bernie Sanders is the only Democrat candidate who stated that his belief is that the candidate going into the convention with the most delegates, period, should be the nominee, regardless if he or she fails to reach that magic number of 1,991. A moment, please. A little on a rattly side tonight. Not exactly sure what that's about. Anyway, the moderates, and I'm not talking about the other candidates, because the other candidates, yeah, you could call them moderates standing there beside Bernie, but no, they're not moderate by any stretch of the imagination beyond that. But the moderate Democrats, the true moderates in the party and the establishment types, are really kind of worried about Bernie Sanders' rise and the impact that it could have down the ballot. And so, in other words, not only are they worried about the presidency, they're also worried about maintaining control of the House, conceivably taking over the Senate. So, and I'm not exactly sure. There are a lot more. There are more than 93 superdelegates. Wow. Okay. There are, apparently, 771 superdelegates. 771 delegates, superdelegates. When it comes down to it, if Bernie does not have that magic number, 1,991 delegates going into the convention, I mean in pocket, he's got them. They're his. They're already pledged. Going into the convention. If he doesn't have that, then it's a contested convention. That's where the superdelegates step in. That's where the meat hits the metal. That's where the deals go down. And what's going to happen when the Bernie bros find out that they got rooked again? That they got played for the chump again, that they got short-sheeted again, that they got swindled, bamboozled, led down the garden path, had the wool pulled over their eyes, conned, scammed, ripped off, screwed over, left out in the wind to twist. I got a feeling they're going to be pretty ticked off. Now, I'm not talking about the people like Kyle Urich. We heard from him the other night. You know, this was a guy that was talking, you know, they're going to burn Milwaukee. Bernie doesn't get the nomination, Milwaukee goes down. Guys, another topic that Gary and I talked about last night. Bernie bros losing their minds and tearing up Milwaukee may be acceptable damages in the eyes of the Democrat National Committee to get out of this. Bernie's old. He's going to die. He's not going to make it to another election. All they got to do is weather the storm and the blowback from this thing. And they're not really worried about the longstanding animosity that's going to create, because I'm sure that these left-wing Marxist socialist kooks that love and worship Bernie because of the promise of free things, they're going to hold a grudge, and they may hold a grudge for a long time. So it could be that they don't care if Milwaukee burns. They may just see that as acceptable losses to getting out from underneath this socialist nutbag. Okay, well, bottom of the hour, I think we're going to take a little break. Quite frankly, all this talking makes a man thirsty, and I am just exactly that. We will be back with more of Conservative's Perspective as soon as I find something to play. I have no idea what it's going to be. I should have all this stuff organized, but you know what? I don't sometimes. I should. It is cold here in the Mountain State. We're looking at, I think, a 19 tonight with a wind chill factor into the single digits. So it's going to be a little, it's button up the trap doors, in other words. Bring in the brass monkey, button up the trap doors. We will be back with more of a Conservative's Perspective right after this. We'll be right back.
clothing. She loves the way Puccini lays down a film. And burns all the creeping from her room.
Hey, hey. James Wozniak here. Conservative perspective. That, of course, the Electric Light Orchestra. I got to tell you something, man. Those guys, in the days of the gigantic rock and roll bands, those guys, they were the best. The absolute best. What were we talking about? Oh, Bernie Sanders, yeah. As it is right now, you know, the nomination is his to lose. And when he gets when he gets to the convention, you can bet your butt he's going to lose it. They're just not going to let him. Now, we heard what the delegates say. And I would say that 93 delegates out of the 771 was probably a pretty decent representative cross-section of what those guys think, because usually the superdelegates are going to be your more moderate, and if not moderate, certainly more establishment-type Democrats. So that's what the delegates, the superdelegates say. Here's what Nancy Pelosi says. No, I'm not making it up. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi on Wednesday confirmed that she would, in fact, be comfortable with socialist Bernie Sanders at the top of the Democrat ticket in the general election. The increasingly likely scenario of Sanders running away with the Democrat nomination is worrying moderate and establishment Democrats. But Pelosi, who has been tasked with assisting her colleagues in maintaining a Democrat majority in the House, does not share those concerns. When asked if she is comfortable with the socialist center as the Democrat nominee, she replied with a simple yes, according to the correspondent from The Hill. We have a lot of strong nominees. I'm not supporting one over the other, but I think every – oh, God. Chuck Schumer. We have a lot of strong nominees. I'm not supporting one over the other, but I think every one of them will beat President Trump. The centrists, the moderates freaking out over the down ballot potential for a bloodbath if Sanders becomes the Democrat Party's nominee. Guys, the dude honeymooned in Moscow. Yeah, that Moscow, the one in Russia. Right, that one, yes. And there's nothing they can do except count on the, you know, hope that he doesn't get that 1991. And I guarantee you, you're going to see more squirrely, sketchy, sideways stuff like you saw in Iowa. You're going to. And Brian Junedeff, golly mitt, has a great article over at American Thinker. I'm going to share with you. He's a frequent contributor there, and we've used a lot of his stuff. He says that a new wildfire has ignited in the U.S., worse than the recent arson-started fires in Australia. This fire here in America, rather than being fueled by dead trees and mismanaged forests, is fueled by Donald Trump hatred and basically near-dead politicians wishing to turn America into a communist dictatorship. And that's what you've got with Bernie Sanders. He's leading the Democrat delegate count, God, with 45 delegates right now. Pete Buttigieg has 25. Biden has 15. He should do better in South Carolina and Florida. And the two girls are in single digits. The guy who was supposed to be the savior of the Democrat Party, Michael Bloomberg, who was recently a Republican, has no delegates yet. He'll probably pick up some. It's a long way to the summer convention and the nearly 2,000 delegates needed to secure the nomination. But as of now, it's Bernie's to lose. South Carolina holds its primary on Saturday. The aggregated polls from 538 show Biden at 30%, dropping from 40 where he was much of last fall. Sanders close behind at 23%, Steyer at 13%, and the rest of the clown shows back down in single digits. They say that this is Joe Biden's last stand. Kind of like the Alamo, where Joe remembers fighting bravely with Corn Pop and his son, the Attorney General, and Nelson Mandela. He recounts this story, and this is no joke, this part is no joke, to a group of 15 supporters in a near-empty high school gymnasium as he asks for their support in his run for the U.S. Senate. No, I'm not making it up. He thinks he's running for Senate now. Joe Biden was the Democrats' great white hope to defeat Donald Trump. Joe Biden. Instead, what we have on display in an embarrassing manner is Joe Biden's early dementia. To allow a former American vice president and senator to be remembered not for his service to his country, his years in political office, but instead as a sad spectacle like we see now is tragic. But his family seems to be willing to overlook this in their zeal to protect their own corruption and reputations. So after Saturday, on March 3rd, the next Tuesday, that's Super Tuesday, you got 15 states, including delegate-rich California and Texas. At this point, it's Bernie's to lose or Mike Bloomberg's to buy. But as the Beatles sang, money can't buy me love, especially when Bloomberg has some serious hashtag Me Too problems and some pretty unwoke racial opinions. The rest of the field beyond those guys is becoming fundamentally irrelevant. Elizabeth Warren plays the debate pit bull well, but beyond that, she's as phony as a $3 bill with just as many tall tales about her ancestry and her so-called struggles. But a judge, no relevant experience, made a mess of the small city he was once in charge of, and if he weren't gay, he wouldn't be anywhere near the Democrat nomination. He serves as a checked box for the woke Democrats. Other young white males who are not gay, like Eric Swalwell and Beto O'Rourke, flamed out early on. Speaking of Buttigieg, let me find this. I don't know who put this one together. I had kind of about halfway noticed it, but I'm old now, and I'm not as clever as I used to be. Thank God there are others out there who are, though. Get a listen to this, okay? This is not an accident, America. Just hang on. Check it out. Here we go.
The way we do every other election, by giving it to the person who got the most votes.
Just a thought.
Brings us
together.
This country was built.
And
it is a
schools.
Movement reaching into
church
basements and barbershops
and in our schools,
into universities
and
union
with our
halls.
Kids. And it's the
voice we can
change the
neighborhood
and
we can
light
up the
city.
Shines as
a beacon
around
the
world once more.
And
this is
our
chance to answer that call.
Oh, Pete. Petey. Peter. Peteroid. Are you copying somebody, pal? Have you been doing some studying, brother?
The way we do every other election, by giving it to the person who got the most votes.
Just a thought.
Brings us
because
together.
This
now,
country
this country was
built.
And
it
is a movement reaching into
and
church basements and barbershops and
in our schools,
into universities
and
union
with our kids.
Halls.
And if the voice
we can change
up
the neighborhood, then we
can
light up
the
city.
Shining.
Shines as a beacon, around the world once more.
And this is our chance to answer that call.
Oh, mother of pearl. Okay, moving on. Then we got Tom Steyer. Tom's mad, which, you know, that kind of like puts him in the Democrat mainstream because all those guys are ticked off about something. But if all you got is global warming and impeach Trump, you're not going to have a whole lot of traction. Amy Klobuchar, I forgot about Amy Klobuchar. June Deff calls her the sensible shoes candidate, and she's about as exciting as a school librarian. So what do you got left? You got Bernie. You got Bernie Sanders, who honeymooned in Moscow, where they have an outstanding and wonderful public transportation system. So you got Bernie and his army of young socialists and communists. And all these cats are ready for all that free stuff he's promising. And to this day, he can't, he won't denounce communist regimes. What does he do? He looks for the bright side of dictators who had no trouble killing their own people. That's why I say, with what he has said about Castro, he has lost Florida, Holmes. It is gone. Bernie who? That's what they're saying. And even before Castro, Cuba had a literacy rate of 76%, and they didn't have to kill anybody to do it. They say it's a horse race. And again, this is something else that I talked about on Tuesday, and Gary and I talked about it again last night when we were beating the breeze. The media want this to sound like it's a horse race, like it's important. And I suppose, to a certain extent, it is important to the Democrats. It's important to the Democrats, but it's not important to anybody else. It's not important to the centrists. It's not important to the Republicans beyond, you know, it's not going to matter. Joe Biden debating Donald Trump. Really? Elizabeth Warren debating Donald Trump. Mike Bloomberg debating Donald Trump. Tom Steyer. Doesn't matter. Pete Buttigieg, edge. Pete Obamajedge there. Are you serious? And what about Chris Matthews' question there? Do the Democrats, do they just want to go ahead and lose this one? Knowing that, you know, none of the guys they've got on the roster, none of these characters they have on their roster have a snowball's chance in hell of beating Donald Trump. And I say that with absolutely no overconfidence. We don't want to get overconfident. We don't want to take anything for granted. But looking at this, all things being equal, again, when have you heard, a moment please, holy Hannah, you've heard the sound bites I play from these campaign monologues that are put out by the Trump campaign. You hear the things that the president says. You hear the ideas and the ideals that the president espouses. again, Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea, what Democrat says these things? What Democrat says these things? There have been 10 Democrat presidential debates. There hasn't been an American flag on any one of those stages. Not one. Well, there was, and then they took it down. So, Nancy Pelosi is fine with a socialist at the top of the ticket. Chris Matthews is a little worried about it. So are those 771 superdelegates. And like I said, I don't think it's going to go any farther than that. But it speaks to a bigger problem within the Democrat Party, within the media, within Hollywood, within, you know, all that whole slice of the fruitcake. And that's this. By embracing this particular ideology and becoming outspoken proponents of it and you know, identifying with it so closely and so tightly, it just shows how far these people have become untethered and disconnected from the Constitution, the Declaration, our founding documents, and what they mean. In addition to fundamental American values, they're not with us. They're someplace else, people. They are someplace else. They are not of the body. I don't know what else to say. I mean, like I said, and bless his heart, thanks, Gary, he quoted me the other night. In a little bit more than 50 years, the Democrat Party went from John Kennedy, who had his flaws, but they went from John Kennedy to Bernie Sanders. What the hell happened between 1960 and 2020, that 60-year period? What the hell went wrong? Well, we could point to a lot of things, but you get my meaning. So again, what's going to happen? What is going to happen in Milwaukee? And you know what? Here's the thing. It's entirely conceivable. And not beyond the pale of imagination to think that Bernie couldn't get the 1991. Maybe he does. I don't know. But I would imagine with each continuing success, with each victory, with each really good placing in any of these primaries as they come up around the country. And like I said, Super Tuesday is coming up next Tuesday. And that's going to be a big deal. You know, the guy's already off and running. What's going to happen then? What happens if he goes to Milwaukee and he's got all the delegates he needs? Well, there won't be any need for a second round of voting, will there? Is it conceivable that enough delegates could be gotten to, if you know what I mean, between now and then, to prevent Bernie from getting the necessary committed delegates, pledged delegates? That's possible too. And I'm sure they've probably got a contingency plan just for that. Maybe they put pressure on some delegates. Maybe there's some money. Maybe there's some pictures. Who knows? At this level, politics is pretty hardball. And even though a lot of that stuff is illegal, it gets done anyway. We live in interesting times, America. We were going to talk about Phil Haney, and we didn't get to that. Last weekend, Phil Haney was found shot to death. Now, if you don't know who Mr. Haney is, and I remember a little bit about him from the time that he was working for Department of Homeland Services, Department of Homeland Security. He was a UC Riverside graduate, and his original calling was as a field agricultural entomologist out in the Middle East. And that is where, in the Middle East, where he began studying Arabic and the Quran. And in a 2016 interview, Frank Gaffney from the Center for Security Policy asked Mr. Haney to comment on the behavior of Islamic supremacists and the doctrine of Sharia. And he said, some people have heard about ants, how they leave scent trails. Other insects do it too, so they can follow each other around and not get lost. Well, that's essentially what Sharia is. That is the universe that Muslims live inside. It forms the boundaries of the world that they live in, and their attempt to implement Sharia on a global basis from their perspective is an attempt to establish order in this chaotic, violent world that we live in. That's why they always say that Islam is a religion of peace, because for them, Sharia equals peace. The erudite Haney proved adept at tracking terrorist groups, but as he explained in the Department of Home, in his book, the Department of Homeland Security ordered him. Not making this up. They ordered him, because he wrote a book called See Something, Say Nothing, to delete or modify several hundred records of individuals tied to designated Islamist terrorist groups like Hamas, and these were in the federal database. Take them out. Like they never existed. Haney told Frank Gaffney, the mosque that San Bernardino terrorist Saeed Farouk attended was part of that Tablighi Jamaat network. The administration, and the administration he's talking about is the Obama administration, deleted 67 records out of the system that I had worked on as a component of the Tablighi case. So those still part of that terrorist network might have a motive to silence Haney, who provided a broader picture about this in his book, See Something, Say Nothing, A Homeland Security Officer Exposes the Government's Submission to Jihad. He posted articles at Front Page like The Terrorist Ties That Bind, which I've read, The Assembly of Muslim Jurists of America's Ominous Post-Election Statement. These serious pieces this guy knew about, again, just like with Michael Cutler, we talked about it, that intersectionality between immigration and national security, but this is that intersectionality between Islamic sympathizers in the previous administration, and are probably still there, and our national security. This guy was a true whistleblower, not a Vindman. No. Not a Christine Blasey Ford. This guy was for real. He was found shot laying beside his vehicle, a firearm within that immediate area between him and the car. Originally, it was concluded to be suicide, but too many of his friends, too many people in the know, too many informed people disputed that, and the sheriff's department in California where he was found have backtracked off of that. it was made, I think, to at least be conceivable as a suicide, but he was shot in the chest. Not a lot of suicides go out that way. There was probably nobody who was better informed on the Muslim terrorist networks. He was like John Guandolo from Understanding the Threat. He was like Michael Cutler, who understands the realities of jihad here in this country. Who was it that removed any references to Islamic fundamentalism or extremism from the FBI manuals? Barack Obama. The Obama administration. Phil Haney was a conscientious DHS guy. San Bernardino most likely could have been thwarted. And, if, you know, even with all the tells that were there, it wasn't, I know. But you got to wonder. And hopefully one of the guests that we're going to be having in the upcoming week or two is a guy by the name of Jim Simpson. Jim was a contemporary of Phil Haney's. And I'm in talks with his representatives to get Mr. Simpson on. He knew Jim Haney. Phil Haney. He was familiar with the work that he was doing. Nobody buys what was happening as a suicide. None of his friends or family buy it. And so the sheriff's department has backtracked on it. Amador County, I think. I think that was the name of it. Yeah, Amador County, which is in California. No longer self-inflicted. Jim Simpson, of course, a friend of his. He was an investigative journalist, a businessman. He was an economist who worked with the Office of Management and Budget under Reagan, H.W., Bill Clinton. He's an expert on immigration. He looks at it, again, from that point of intersectionality between immigration and national security. And in this case, national security means radical Islamic jihad. Hopefully we'll get something on him soon and have him here to talk more about this. The guy was going back to work for the DHS. His life was positive. His life was upbeat. No reason on earth for him to take his life, according to those people who know him the best. So if it wasn't suicide, what was it? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Running a little bit long this evening, but that's okay. Mark, again, not going to be in for a couple of weeks on a hiatus with some family stuff, which obviously takes the priority. We'll be here, though, doing it live Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We also have a recorded version of the program that goes out over the Mojo 5.0 radio network, Mojo50.com. If you're not listening, you should be. The very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio out there, Mojo50.com. I think that's about all we're going to do for tonight, guys. I want you to take good care. South Carolina is Saturday. We will be talking about that along with Super Tuesday on Super Tuesday. We might That's going to be an interesting show because we ought to be able to get some of the returns as they're coming in from 7 to 9. So we'll be back here Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, taking a look at things as we do through a conservative perspective. In the meantime, God bless you. God bless America. We'll see you then.